Two people wounded during a shooting inside a Noblesville middle school. A new chairman chosen for the State Alcohol Study Commission. That plus President Trump praises Senator Joe Donnelly. And more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending June 1st, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
A student and a teacher were injured last Friday when another student, armed with two handguns, fired shots in a Noblesville middle school.
Seventh grader Ella Whistler and science teacher Jason Seaman are recovering after an unidentified boy started shooting in Seaman's classroom last week. Seaman, who was struck three times, was hailed as a hero for tackling the student and limiting the damage. The school district had developed plans to address a shooting situation, and officials said those plans were effective. Few details have been released about the incident, and the boy has not yet been charged. Legislative leaders and Governor Eric Holcomb praised school leaders and police and said recent action by the General Assembly will only help make schools safer.
Does the Noblesville school shooting change the gun debate in Indiana? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, State House Bureau Chief for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm political analyst John Ketzenberger. Host Brandon Smith will return next week. Ann Delaney, the General Assembly just approved an additional $5 million for school safety and a $35 million loan fund for developing safety plans during last month's special session. What else needs to be done to prevent any more school shootings in Indiana?
Seriously? I mean, what they did was put a Band-Aid on the problem so they could look as if they were doing something for school safety. If they wanted to do something for school safety, they'd do something about guns. I mean, step back from this incident, and what do you have? You have a child, basically a teenager, being able to have free access to a gun that isn't kept in a locked cabinet and isn't under any law which would impose a penalty under the owner of the gun to keep it that way and keep it out of the hands of children. We won't even do that in Indiana because the NRA controls the Republican supermajority, plain and simple. I'm not saying that you can take everyone's gun away or that you should, but common sense regulations on guns. I mean, this is something that happens every week, sometimes more than 1 week. Are we going to put armed guards in every school? Are we going to have metal detectors, and are we going to enforce that? What's the price behind that? And we're going to turn our teachers into target practice? I mean, thank God that teacher was there, but he shouldn't have to be. And we shouldn't have active shooter drills in preschools. We have got to deal with the gun problem. And we will not do that as long as Republicans have a supermajority in the Indiana General Assembly.
So, Mike O'Brien, do you think that the legislature will address gun issues that they haven't addressed in the past?
Well, I think you saw that this session. So, obviously, this shooting took place outside of legislative session. The Texas shooting took place during the session. It took place during a debate over whether the state should go to unlicensed constitutional, what's called constitutional carry, that you have a right under the Constitution to carry a firearm, and therefore, unless you have you have a criminal conviction or some reason like that, you shouldn't be able to. The legislature backed off of that and instead pursued this school safety legislation that expanded programming through the Department of Education that was currently focused on just bullying and gang activity in schools and opened it up to school safety. How do we improve safety? How do we lock these schools down? How do we improve safety in schools? How do we make sure that if the fire alarm goes off, you know, is it like the situation in Florida, how do we know that's just not a trick to get everybody in the hallway and there's a shooter there? So they're trying to learn these lessons from around the country, put those protocols in place and start training, making sure there's consistent training around the state, and put money behind it. So that's this revolving loan program, or the matching loan program, the $5 million into schools. And it's not the first step. That was a step that was taken late in session, and then it didn't fail in the last night session. They just didn't get to it, and it was part of that list of priority legislation that Republicans teed up for the special session. So we're making substantive steps that direction.
The $5 million, just so I'm clear, the $5 million was for school safety generally, grants right to the schools.
Right.
The $35 million was a loan fund that can be used for matching loans.
That's
for
correct.
Additional programs.
That's right. Yeah.
And it probably should say that Noblesville had used about $120,000 in grant money since 2014 for school planning for safety purposes. But John, I'm curious, will this have an effect in the election, do you think?
You know, you wonder about the sustainability of the anger and the frustration. Certainly after the Parkland shooting in Florida, we saw sort of a groundswell, to say the least, led by those very articulate students who were very passionate about the issue of school safety and gun control, or at least gun reduction. But again, we're a society now that is short of memory and tends to be rather fickle in our selection of issues that drive us at the polling place. That's not necessarily the case with those individuals who consider themselves Second Amendment absolutists or advocates of the First Order. Now, they tend to have no problem sustaining the zeal that drives them and motivates them at the polling place. Whether those who are concerned about the licensure of guns or the absence of licensure or restrictions that might prevent guns from falling into the hands of young people who shouldn't have them, that's the bigger question. Can they maintain that sort of frustration or anger? And that remains to be seen. We haven't seen it necessarily at the ballot box anywhere else in the country.
Well, and interestingly, Nikki Kelly, the mayor of Noblesville, John Ditzler, said he was asked to leave a gun store on the next day that was having its grand opening, and the NRA had come to do presentations. The mayor said that he had been asked to leave after he was trying to make some points. The gun store owners disagree with that. But do you think that in the light of the incident last Friday that maybe the gun store should have considered postponing the event altogether?
I mean, I assume since it was their grand opening, they had put weeks of work into that, and maybe they could have erred on the side of caution, but I also think maybe the emotion was a little raw at the moment, and maybe the mayor should have also erred on the side of caution and maybe not gone to confront them.
I think sometimes you see, like, wherever this happens in the country, the political reaction fits the politics of that area. So in the East, we saw, you know, strong efforts for gun reform. But even in Florida for the Parkland shooting, they were in session. They tried to push gun regulation through the legislature and couldn't get it done. And that was probably the most comprehensive grassroots student-led effort ever coming out of one of these incidents, and they couldn't get it done. In Texas, the resource officer shot and killed that shooter. Now you see redoubled efforts to put student resource officers. So I think if you're looking for kind of a read the tea leaves in Indiana, the reforms have to match the politics of the people in that state. And we're not going to be a strong gun reform state. We're not going to be a strong gun restriction state.
I don't think it matches the politics of the state now. I think it matches the politics of the legislature, because your caucus is controlled by the NRA, and that's where it comes down to it. And it's interesting that President Trump called to congratulate that teacher who was so brave in that circumstance, and that was a good thing. He did not make a similar phone call to the African-American person in the Waffle House shooting in Tennessee who put his life on the line likewise. Just interesting to see that, the way he treats people based on race.
One thing I think the owners of this newly opened store would take offense at the notion, and as we've seen in a public statement released by those individuals, that they didn't give thought to perhaps postponing, that they were cognizant of the implications. And one thing that they did change, and again, we can argue about whether it sends the right message or sends no message at all, and that was that the NRA representatives who had flown in the night before to staff a tent where individuals could go and register ostensibly for membership in the NRA, that they said, okay, we're not going to do that. We just will be informational. You can come and get some information about
and where to mail in your application.
But they didn't register anybody that day. And so just to shine a light on all aspects of this, the owners of the store, I think, would say that there was some concessions made to the events of that had preceded
kind
them.
I
preface my remarks by saying
very, very little.
Let's move on. Time now for our viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should the General Assembly do more to restrict guns at schools? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question was, is getting right to try through Congress a significant political win for Joe Donnelly. And the 58% said yes, 12% said no, and 30% said it won't have much impact. If you want to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The commission appointed last year to study alcohol issues in the General Assembly will have a new chairman when it reconvenes this summer.
The Indiana Alcohol Code Revision Commission will be led by former State Representative Bill Davis, a Republican from Portland, Indiana. Davis was appointed by Speaker Brian Bosma, who decided not to reappoint former Senator Bev Gard, a Republican who chaired the commission last year. Davis left the General Assembly in 2013 to join the Pence administration as head of the Office of Community and Rural Affairs. He recently joined a government relations firm headed by former Pence Chief of Staff Bill Smith. Alcohol bills, including Sunday sales and cold beer in grocery and convenience stores, died repeatedly in the House Public Policy Committee when Davis was chairman. It is not known whether Davis will look with favor on the effort to extend cold beer sales or other more comprehensive changes to the state's liquor laws.
Mike O'Brien, what do you expect when Davis takes over?
Well, first of all, just so people kind of understand, I know it was reported that Bev Gard was kind of yanked out of the spot and Bill Davis was put in. This interim study committee process, the Senate controls it 1 year, the House controls it the next, and they kind of go on that cycle. So the chairman for all of these committees are now House members, not senators. And so right. I think that was part of the motivation for the change, because the House now controls this. Bill Davis has a great background in the legislature. He's got a strong background understanding alcohol issues. He chaired the Public Policy Committee. I think it's been a little unfairly characterized that he's kind of an obstructionist on alcohol laws in general. He's not. There were expansions in alcohol, particularly on kind of the craft and the artisan distillery industry that is now growing quickly in Indiana, was in part created because of him. He was chair of that committee when that legislation took place. So I don't know quite what to expect, honestly, in this debate. Last year was dominated by Sunday sales and this kind of two-year exercise through this alcohol study commission. Cold beer was not recommended by the commission narrowly. It didn't pass, obviously, through the legislature. There's going to be a hard push by those interests to bring cold beer back. The point of this second year was to look at the other tiers. How do we distribute alcohol? How is it, how does it get from the producer to the distributor to the retailer? And that kind of part of the three-tier system. Politically, I think the problem, part of the problem here is the thing that the public wanted most, which was Sunday sales, is now off the table. And they don't really care how the beer gets to the liquor store. They just need it to be there when they show up, And so the debate from brewery to liquor store is less important to them.
And Delaney, do you think Speaker Bosma chose former Representative Davis over reappointing Gard, or did he want Senator Gard not to be in charge anymore?
I wouldn't presume to read Brian Bosma's mind, but I find it interesting here that they loosened the laws a little last year, so I think they're probably going to tighten them a little this year so they can keep all the lobbying groups fighting with each other and therefore contributing to political campaigns. I've said for years that we ought to be out of this business completely. We ought to be regulating alcohol for safety and for taxation purposes and no other reason. What the legislature spends its time and money and resources doing are picking who ought to win and who ought to lose in this. And the laws make absolutely no sense, except if you understand who's on which side of the issue. And as far as consumers are concerned, they ought to get out of it. They ought to get out of Dodge and leave it to the marketplace. Should be the Republican position.
Real libertarian approach.
It should be your position, Mikey. It should be.
So to that point, Nikki Kelly, Monarch Beverage, a large distributor, announced that it was laying off 100 people because of the liquor laws that restricted a portion of its ability to distribute certain types of liquor. And so they lost the business and had to lay these folks off. Do you think that kind of news will affect the non-consumer, more industry-related debate this year?
Well, jobs is something that usually lawmakers pay some attention to, and it's clear that the nonsensical wholesale law that Monarch has been fighting for years and lost a lawsuit cost them a direct client of theirs who wanted to be able to wholesale both wine and liquor at the same time, but Monarch wholesales beer, and they're not allowed to wholesale liquor. I mean, those are the kinds of things that this commission is supposed to get down, you know, into the weeds and discuss.
So I think all of this, John, makes me wonder if there's a more confounding issue in the legislature than the alcohol laws.
Not over an extended period of time. Now, there are issues, I would argue, that come out of, well, we've set our watches. We've taken care of that.
Well,
but, I mean, there are
back.
Issues that kind of pop up from time to time, and there are some perennial favorites, quote, unquote, that we deal with, but nothing with the sustained sort of frustration. And it's interesting, the debate, you know, I call it the three M's. You know, the debate, in many cases, at least what you hear the public rhetoric is, it's about morality and safety. We all know that really it's the other two M's, which are money and market share.
Right.
And I guess they come out
they
in the order
together.
Of market share and money.
Right.
And to that extent, even though, as Mike suggests, this may not be as sexy a study committee, their deliberations this time around, because it's focusing on wholesaling and distribution as opposed to, you know, what the consumer can buy and when he or she can buy it, doesn't mean that those other M's that I just mentioned, the market share and money, won't be perhaps even more significant, and more will be at stake than we saw last session. So
money will flow from the lobbyists to the legislature.
You can do that 7 days a week, and it can be hot, cold, Sunday. The money can always flow
from
the lobbyists. So
it will.
No restrictions on that.
Just imagine if they ever legislate marijuana and they try to figure that marketplace out. President Trump had kind words for Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly as he signed the so-called Right to Try bill into law on Wednesday.
I also want to thank Senator Donnelly. Senator Donnelly, thank you very much. That's really great. Appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
It was a little startling to hear the president thank Donnelly, who was a leading co-sponsor of the bill that gives patients with serious illnesses the chance to try experimental drugs. Just a couple of weeks earlier, Trump tagged Donnelly with a nickname and excoriated him for failing to support the tax cut that was enacted this spring.
Nikki Kelly, can Republicans trust Trump on the campaign trail?
I think he can when he's on the campaign trail, but I do. I mean, I think they get exactly what you think you're getting with Trump, which is he's inconsistent. When he says one day is not what he'll say another day, and that, I guess, is what keeps it a little exciting.
Well, not if you're a candidate counting on him to carry popularity for you. How do you expect Senator Donnelly to spin this, John Schwanes?
Well, I think he, the way he has spun virtually everything thus far on these votes that have been closely watched as some sort of barometer as to whether he is for him or against him when it comes to the White House, he can't really, I don't think, proactively go out and say, I'm Donald Trump's guy, because that undercuts the whole notion that he's independent, that he is the only person or only people he works for happen to be Hoosier voters, not the people in the White House, regardless of which party affiliation they possess. So he really can't, I don't think, he can't be the aggressor in this, using this. To him, it seems like it's something he kind of, you know, puts in his back pocket, more of an insurance policy, if in fact he's attacked on that issue. And who's to say, again, in a few months from now, whether he will be attacked on that issue, but I think that's just a keeper in the back pocket.
So, Mike O'Brien, how do you react when you see messages from candidates related to Trump?
Well, in the case of Joe Donnelly, I mean, he's not hesitated to say, hey, I'm with the president 60-some-odd percent of the time, and try to publicize that, because he knows that in Indiana, where Trump is popular, he's going to need some of that vote to come over and support him. I think in the context of just this example, this right-to-try legislation, this was something that was passed by Governor Mike Pence when he was here in Indiana. It was something that he was involved in as vice president and was a priority. So I think and a really good idea, you know, to let these people who are terminally ill try different experimental forms of treatment. So I don't think this is one where you're really trying to find a wedge issue on the campaign trail. I mean, I think this is an example where Republicans and Democrats came together to do something that might actually help people who are sick.
Maybe that's
Did
why
somebody
it's
tell
news.
Them that that's what they were doing, because they probably wouldn't have voted.
Sometimes
that way.
You just do it by accident.
You know, yeah, could be. This just shows how Joe Donnelly has represented Indiana since he's been in Congress, much less in the Senate. He works across party lines to do what he thinks is best for the citizens of Indiana, in sharp contrast to Mike Braun, who only wants to be a rubber stamp for Donald Trump. That's not what the function of the Senate and the House is supposed to be. They are supposed to be checks and balances on the executive power, and I think that's what voters want. They don't want a rubber stamp. They don't want, I'm Donald Trump too, which is what Mike Braun professes to be. But this shows that even in a hostile environment in Washington, Joe Donnelly can work with anybody to get something done for Hoosiers, and I think that's what Hoosier voters are going to be looking for.
And from a Democratic perspective, the president is the gift that keeps on giving?
The president is frightening from a Democratic perspective, from a citizen perspective. I mean, I am afraid of what he's going to do on a daily basis. I don't think it's amusing. I think the fact that he's the president of the United States and he lies every time he opens his mouth is something that should concern every citizen in this country.
Too bad a majority were scared Hillary would be president, which is why he's president.
Yeah, because they didn't understand. A lot of people
actually,
voted
for him. I think a majority did.
That's right.
A majority of the electoral college thought that. Not a majority of the population.
He didn't come into office and everybody went, wait a minute. Who's this guy?
He lost the popular vote. Remember, by 3 million votes.
Eyes wide open vote.
Let's move on.
Yeah.
This week, the government expanded enforcement of immigration laws, and the resistance to it once again clashed.
Erica Fierro was accompanied to an appointment with federal immigration officials by members of Faith in Indiana, a coalition of religious organizations opposed to the expanded use of deportation against people who are not considered a threat to the United States. Fierro was brought to the U.S. when she was 5. The Beech Grove High School graduate's husband was deported last month, and Erica is likely to be deported by the end of June. In the meantime, she is trying to secure U.S. passports for their 2 children who were born here, so that they may travel with her to Mexico. If she is unable to secure the passports for the children, who are 3 and 8, it's likely they will be placed in foster homes. The religious leaders who accompanied Fierro to her hearing told the media the government should not use deportations as a means of intimidation and that Congress should take up immigration reform to settle the issue.
Anne Delaney, will immigration policy be a central issue in this year's campaign?
Well, I think so. This is inhumane. I think Governor Holcomb ought to get on the phone to Mike Pence and say, Christians who care about families and care about children don't do these kinds of things. This is absolutely inexcusable. That mother was brought here when she was 5 years old. It was no wrongdoing on her part. And those 2 children going to foster care rather than being with their parents, this never would have happened under the Obama administration, and it is absolutely inhumane, and they ought to be embarrassed about it. They really should.
Mike O'Brien, will Congress address this issue finally?
Not quick enough for this family, but they should. This is a terrible thing that's happening to them. I'm old enough to remember when the Republican Party, and it wasn't that long ago because I'm not that old, could be for a border wall, and they could be for punishing employers that intentionally brought in undocumented workers, but could also humanely look at a situation like this and say, we've got to take care of a very practical problem before us, which is our immigration policy in this country has been broken forever.
Decades.
And because of that, people were brought in when they were 5, and now they're 35, and they have kids who are U.S. citizens. And the right answer isn't deporting them and sending their kids to a foster home. I don't know what else to say about it other than that. We have gotten so far away from George W. Bush's compassionate conservatism on immigration that it's unrecognizable right now. The answer to this is not binary, that if you're an illegal immigrant, you are deported. It is not that simple because, for this reason, this is a complicated situation.
So, John Schwanes, we see Congress work together on the right to try, yet they're seemingly incapable of coming together, as Mike talks about, on a very important issue, in many ways just as important.
Arguably it affects far more people than the right to try bill. I think you're right about that. But it also is far more ticklish politically, and that's why we won't see the kind of come together, peace, love, and charity approach. I don't think there's any chance of that now. If the public continues to see families ripped apart, there may be some sense that we need to have some common sense introduced here, and it's not just the door A or door B, and there's no, you know, you don't. Why even have judges if it's that simple? Just we could save money and just send them right back at without a hearing. And that's not what we're about. I mean, Ann says it's a Christian thing. I would argue that it has nothing to do really with religion. I think there are lots of faiths and religions that probably
well,
want to see the family
who
preserved.
Professes to be
but it's about human justice and
Christian.
It's about the preservation of family units and common sense.
Is that why Nikki, is that why, Nikki, that it's hard to get your hands around this, and so it's hard to make it a campaign issue? Is that why we aren't getting where we are quickly?
I mean, it's easy to make it a campaign issue. You saw Donald Trump do that. It's harder when you want to look at, like Mike said, the actual details of how it's affecting people.
Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. And all of us here wish our friend and colleague, Cedric Freeman, a full and speedy recovery. Come on, Ced, we're pulling for you. I'm political analyst John Ketzenberger. Brandon Smith will return next week. Join us then, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.